Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. Thank you very much for joining us. A little chilly today. I call it refreshing. A nice cold splash of reality in your face when you go outside. Get your day started right. Get you moving in the right direction, hopefully. It's Tuesday, December 5th. 2017. Yeah. So, the Chiefs still lost on Sunday. That didn't change overnight. But we're not going to dwell. Maybe we will a little bit. Maybe I'm lying. I don't know. We won't dwell on it as much as, of course, we did yesterday. I mean, yesterday was the day after. I got one direct message. I mean, why you guys just why are you talking about the Chiefs all day? I don't know. It's Monday, and they played the day before. I mean, trust me, sir, that sent me that. There were times I was questioning why do I keep talking about the Chiefs, but it's kind of the thing that people want to hear about on Monday after the game. So. I don't know what to tell you there, really, but
yeah.
I get it, but it's going to happen, and I'm going to go ahead and let you know now, win or lose, this coming Monday's game will probably be devoted to the Chiefs. And so just
maybe.
Programming, no, there's no maybe. There's programming, no, just letting you know.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've looked ahead, I've looked into... Unlike Andy Reid, I do have a crystal ball sitting in our office, and I looked into it and said, hey, Monday you're going to be talking Chiefs. Like, all right. Okay. There we go. But I've tried to move some things around and provide some alternative topics today. We taped an interview with Missouri head basketball coach Konzo Martin. Didn't ask him about the Chiefs. That topic didn't come up. So I can safely say that at 7:30, you will hear a full segment with no talk about the Chiefs. That's guaranteed. Done deal. Because it's pre-recorded. Radio magic! And then I was brainstorming last night, and boy, that takes a lot. The lights flickered in the house. Electricity almost went out. I was trying to think really hard in the basement.
It's that time of year, huh?
I was like, and I said, you know what? A little baseball. I'll sprinkle a little baseball in there with Rustin Dodd, because there was a story tweeted out by Ken Rosenthal that I refuse to read all of, because I'm not going to pay for a membership yet to whatever website he's writing for.
The Athletic?
Yes, sure. I declined. I'll get to it at some point, because I knew somebody at some point would sum it up and tweet out the need-to-knows for free. And they did. But that seems like, I'm kind of like a wait-and-see approach on that deal, because it looks like they've got a lot of good writers, and it's somewhat reasonable. So maybe I will purchase a subscription, but I was in no mood yesterday to fish out my credit card, and I was very angry. I was waiting for a doctor's appointment. Oh, okay, I'll read this Ken Rosenthal report, because he teases something about the Royals. Let me see that. All right, now just for blah, blah, blah month, put on your ugly on. Just let me read the story. Maybe, I'm like negotiating with someone that's not there.
Yeah.
If you just let me read the story, then maybe I pay if it's a good story. Never happened. Point is, I got to the bottom of it, and something that I know I brought up on the show, I feel like you've brought it up. Lord knows what Jake's brought up. But Ken Rosenthal suggested that the Royals are entertaining the idea of capitalizing on Whit Merrifield's outstanding year last year and capitalizing on the fact that he's under control until 2022, and perhaps seeing what the market is for Whit Merrifield, which I think is very smart, mm-hmm. very wise.
Yeah.
And so Rosenthal said the Royals were thinking about trading some, you know, a couple of controllable players, taking offers, and then he mentioned another guy. And I thought to myself, huh, would he really get a lot? And then I looked at, and then you're a month removed or however long it's been from the season, and I remember, well, this guy was really good. And I looked at his numbers, and I looked at how long he's under control. I'm thinking, yeah, who do you think I'm talking about?
Well, I read
you paid for it, didn't you?
No.
Daddy Warbucks. You don't care. You're just like, I'll pay for it all. Right?
I think MLB trade rules gave me the gist of what I needed to know.
What player do you think is a valuable, that Ken Rosenthal considers a valuable commodity that wouldn't be totally obvious?
Positional player?
Nope. That's the only hint I'll give you. What's that leave? What's it leave?
A pitcher.
You got it. Reasonable.
Peter Moyland.
No. No. But
there were people calling for this man to be the closer by the end of the season.
No, but correctly. An awful guess by you.
I know, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to guess, you might as well just be terrible at it.
Scott Alexander.
Yeah. He did close a little bit at the end.
Well, I mean, just if you're looking at the numbers, first of all, what jumps off the page at you, 69 innings. I mean, that. What else do you want from a reliever, really? That's the sweet spot for most baseball teams.
Yep.
Like, how many innings can you give me? 69? You're signed.
Trade.
I mean, to me, I don't even have to look at anything else. You know? I'm like a rival GM or whatever. I'm on the phone and, yeah, I'm asking about Alexander. How many innings did he pitch? 69.
Yes.
Sold.
Yes.
Name your price.
Yes.
It's gonna be hard to complete that trade if you keep hanging up the phone.
That was on hold.
Oh, you put him on hold.
Send you to my secretary.
Let you listen to the whole music. Here's the whole music.
Right. Yeah. Put you on hold. You're pulling the game over. That's how I like to imagine trades go down.
Yeah. I like Steven's GM voice, too. Right. It's like the 1950s boss.
He's got a cigar.
Hi.
How many innings did he go? 69? We won him.
Yes. Now you're talking turkey.
Neck?
Right. And there's nothing else needs to be known. I don't care about any other numbers. A 2.48 ERA. You know. And a lefty. So, I mean, you can see why. I mean, you're not going to get a king's ransom for him, but he's a very valuable commodity. And we've seen teams get silly giving up valuable commodities for a reliever. And he would, you know, if you're a contending team and you look at his numbers, and I'm not saying he can be a closer, but he can close. I mean, remember how good he was in several high leverage situations where he came in, had zero margin for error, and got the job done? Well, there's something to be said for that.
Sure.
There's some guys that, you know, even though they might put up good numbers, that you do not want anywhere near a bases-loaded, two-out, ninth-inning situation. I'll let you think about that and decide who that might be. But Scott Alexander, he had something to him. He was money in big-time situations. So if I'm a contender, I'm like, okay, yeah, for sure. And who knows, maybe you package both of them. Second base, the free agent market is not great for second base. Steals are at a premium. Speed, athleticism. I mean, look where Whit Merrifield ranked in stolen bases in the American League. Look how good he was all around. Why wouldn't you? If you're a contending team and you feel like you need an upgrade at second base, why wouldn't you give a lot for Whit Merrifield? And so I thought that was interesting, and so. And the actual winter meetings right around the corner. And so Rustin Dodd, I thought would be good to talk to in the 8 o'clock hour. Rustin also wrote about the Kansas City Royals and their offseason plans over the weekend. And so and the Royals still say that they're interested in a reunion with Eric Hosmer, whether they're doing a full rebuild or not.
But if you're Eric Hosmer, are you interested in that?
Well, here's the deal. It's been really slow as far as the beginning of the free agent period, you know, and we're waiting for the first domino to fall. Also, last night related to the Royals, Mike Minor. Reports are that he signed with the Texas Rangers, and that was someone that the Royals were interested in, but many people felt like the number of years he was going to get would not be something that the Royals would be interested in. And so, but initial reports were that he agreed to a deal pending physical with the Texas Rangers. And so maybe that'll get some things going. And I'll be curious to see how much he got and for how long. He has started in the past, but we saw him be a very, very good reliever for the Royals. And so it'll be interesting to see also how the Texas Rangers use him. And so Mike Minor, he is off the board. But Rustin Dodd wrote a lot about this on Sunday and what the Royals are thinking about doing this offseason when it finally gets going as far as Moustakas and Kane and Hosmer and some of the other big names that are out there. Maybe this Mike Minor thing will get some things going. But we will talk to Rustin Dodd in the 8 o'clock hour about this. Also, some names that are out there that were discussed yesterday in multiple reports when talking about this Ken Rosenthal report, guys that the Royals might consider trading. Kelvin Herrera. If anyone would be interested in Joaquin Soria. But Danny Duffy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I think they would hear it. They would listen because he's signed to a contract. I want to say a team-friendly contract, but he's got to perform to make it team-friendly. Mm-hmm. He's got to be available to make it team-friendly. But throwing him out there. And I've said this, and I'm not saying this just because I love him, but the only guy that I would not, although he would probably get a huge return, Salvador Perez. Because I feel like if you were going to rebuild and if you're going to try to replicate the winning culture and do this thing again where you go through another cycle of rebuilding and hopefully end up back in the playoffs, you need some leadership.
Thank you, my friend.
First of all, you need someone to help try to build this pitching staff and work with the young pitchers. Someone to have leadership both in the clubhouse and on the field. Someone to be the face of the franchise. And someone for the young players to follow behind. Salvi's your guy. Now, if you were overwhelmed with an unbelievably crazy offer, I don't know. I'd have to see the offer before I could possibly answer that question. But I do think just besides Salvi and what he does and how he produces at the plate and what he means to a pitching staff behind the plate, I think there's I know the stats guys don't like to hear anything about intangibles, but there's a value to Salvador Perez besides just what he does as far as numbers. There's a value to having him around as you bring in this next wave of players to show them how it's done and to try to be a leader. Like if you take him, who's the leader in that clubhouse? Who's going to show these kids how to win? And again, there's value to handling a pitching staff and working with young pitchers. And so I'm not saying no way. Well, I guess I am saying no way. I wouldn't deal him. I'd have to be like stunned and overwhelmed with an offer that most teams wouldn't give. What about you?
Well, here's where the timeline of what the Royals think this rebuild could look like comes into play. Because Rustin Dodd is saying that they're looking at 2 to 3 years to rebuild. If that's the case, the contracts that you have Perez and Duffy under, they'd still be on the team by the time the team was ready to win again. So maybe if you really believe that and you're the Royals, you hold on to those guys because they are part of the rebuild, you know. But I got to be perfectly honest. I find that to be quite ambitious. To
be honest,
to tear down and rebuild in 3 years. If you look at the Royals' first go round, if you consider, you know, Mike Moustakas, maybe the start of the rebuild. You know, that was the first draft pick that they take credit for. You know, they drafted him in 2007. The team didn't really compete until 2013. Remember, they were above 500 in 2013, but didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
So that's 6 years. You know, I mean, if they're going to go draft some high school players and sign some teenagers out of the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and things like that, those guys are going to be 6 years before they're really good players, most likely. So 3 years to rebuild, that seems ambitious, but, you know, I don't know the Royals' details of their plan. Maybe they feel like if they trade some of these guys, they get some prospects who are a little more, you know, further advanced in their minor league careers that allows them to reboot it a little quicker.
You'd have to get something really good for Whit Merrifield.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, because he's under team control for quite some time as well. You know, I mean, he got 2 years of service time? So, I mean, he wouldn't even become free agent for 4 more years. He'd become his first, I mean.
2022, right?
2023, it says on Baseball Reference. So
2025.
And Duffy and Perez are both 2022. So if you really think it's only going to take 2 or 3 years to turn this thing back around, you might as well keep those guys because they're going to still be on the team by the time you turn it around.
Or if they think that Whit Merrifield had this career year and he's not going to duplicate that and he's at peak value right now and you want to capitalize on that.
Yeah, it all comes down to whether or not you think you're getting better return. You know, are you getting more value in return for the player?
Like when we were considering trading Jake to another show, it was it 3 years ago?
Yep.
And he was fantastic.
Right.
And we said, man, we could get a lot back
cash
for
in.
Him. I mean, look at this. Yeah. That's his best year. And then obviously we blew it.
Yeah. I wanted to get out of here.
You know.
Yeah, we missed that opportunity. Right, now no one's going to make that kind of offer for us now.
So maybe I feel like the Royals might learn.
That was my mistake, though.
That's why people call you Whit Gutierrez around here. I don't know if you realize that.
I mean, I blocked a trade.
Right. Yeah. You blocked many things.
Right. But that's, you know, because I had the power of the no trade clause in my contract.
That's ridiculous. It's Lebo's fault. Let's take a break and think about that. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So Ken Rosenthal wrote that the Royals might be considering trading Whit Merrifield, who broke out with a 288, 324, 460 slash and an AL leading 34 stolen bases. Rosenthal also notes that Kansas City would listen to offers on left-handed reliever Scott Alexander, 248 ERA, 7.7 strikeouts per nine innings. A ridiculous 73.8% ground ball rate in 69 innings, as I repeat that. Both players are controlled through the 2022 season and are still 2 years removed from arbitration eligibility. Beyond that pairing, the Royals have a few more obvious trade candidates. Kelvin Herrera, Joaquin Soria.
What?
Both quality right-handed relievers that are just 1 year from free agency, though neither is signed at a bargain rate.
Backjack off.
Nope.
Herrera's going to be an arbitration guy, I believe.
Projected to earn $8.3 million. And Soria is still owed $10 million.
Backjack off.
The article also mentions Jason Hamill. Did not have a strong season in Kansas City, but ate up 180 innings with quality strikeout-to-walk numbers and a 4.37 FIP. He still owed $11 million through 2018. Danny Duffy signed for another 4 years and $60 million would represent one of the top starting pitching options of the trade market if the Royals field offers on him. And as we mentioned, the Royals lose one of their free agents, as several reports last night had Mike Minor signing with the Texas Rangers. So, what's your guess there? What do you think he got? Some people were we're talking about 4 years.
Wow. This
that's,
Mike Miner?
That's a different Mike Miner that sent us songs
sure about
the Chiefs and Royals. I don't know. No, yeah, I met this Mike Miner. He came out to Rally House when I was doing a remote and introduced himself. Very nice man. Thank you. And we love his music.
So that's not the same Mike Miner that just signed with Texas?
No, if it is, he looks different in person.
Okay.
He'll I'll be say, 30 years old soon. I mean, there's no reports. So I'm just like, what did you think he was going to get? It was predicted by Major League Baseball trade rumors that he would get 4 years at $28
million. Wow.
I mean, he was terrific, though.
Yeah.
The 4 years. What irritates me, boy, the Rangers are out there making things happen because they already signed Doug Fister.
Man.
They got a minor Fister. Get this staff right now.
Wow.
Well, whatever. Doug Fister. Why won't the Royals ever sign him? What have I done to not ever see him in a Royals
uniform?
But look, Mike Minor was really good, but if he signs for 4 years, that you with his injury past and everything else,
yeah,
you tip your cap and say, thanks, Mike, for your time in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Not interested. If you're the Rangers, if you think you can shore up your bullpen and that can help you get to the World Series, that's smart. If he pitches the way he did last year.
Right.
He was terrific. So that's where we're at. We'll talk to Rustin Dodd at 8:30 about that and see what he has to say. And again, you can go to Rustin Dodd's Twitter account. Rustin Dodd is his handle and read the story that he wrote on Sunday. It goes more in depth in the offseason plans and what the Royals are considering doing as hopefully this hot stove league gets fired up right now. Did anyone watch the Monday night football game last night?
You know, I was doing some work for Catholic Charities last night, so I missed the first half, but I got home in time to see the second half, see the comeback by the Steelers.
Did you see the collapse by the Bengals? What you said?
I did. Well, yeah, okay. That too.
Let me vent for just a moment, okay? We've all had, I don't know, maybe not all of us, anyone that has ever wagered on the game has had a bad beat where it makes you sick. Okay, I experienced that last night with fantasy football. I lost my division by 1 point.
Oh man!
With a Ben Roethlisberger 12-yard pass followed by the field goal for the guy that never misses against Cincinnati. I was up by 26 at halftime, going up against Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh kicker, and I knew how it was going to end, and like I even predicted the I went so far as predicted the score. So I go, no, Pittsburgh's going to win this thing 23-20.
Mm-hmm.
Touchdown, field goal, and some combination. Cincinnati is going to just fall apart in the fourth quarter. It's so predictable. I don't know how, I have no idea how Marvin Lewis still has a job. He still hasn't won a playoff game there, right? If you think, like what were we saying about the Chiefs after watching them on Sunday? Poorly coached and undisciplined.
Yeah,
that's just or just playing like a dumb team, right?
Yeah.
Well, that makes the Chiefs look like the smartest team in the NFL. Did you watch that? Did you watch how stupid that team is?
Yeah. Oh, I mean it's amazing.
Penalties.
Wait, like 173 yards in penalties?
It set their record.
Yeah.
It's a Bengals record, which that's saying
yeah,
something.
173
right.
yards.
That's a high bar.
Yeah.
I don't know how Marvin Lewis still has a job.
Like three.
You know how long he's been their coach, by the way?
Yes.
Forever?
15 yeah. years.
He has not won a playoff game.
15 years.
And he's 0-7 in the playoffs. So you're watching this game, and at least three or four times what would happen to them in the second half, they'd get a nice run or a nice pass play on second down, holding, and then they'd have second and 17, and that would ruin the drive, right? And you just saw it. They were going to collapse with stupid penalties and stupid plays, dropped passes. Like the last drive that they had before Pittsburgh kicked the game-winning field goal, I think it was on second down, beautiful pass to A.J. Green, which would have picked up like 15 or 20 yards, just dropped it. Just dropped it. And the Cincinnati crowd, you could just hear, like, oh, this is, we're watching it.
Yeah, they're waiting for it.
Yeah.
They're absolutely waiting
for it. You saw it happening.
Yep.
And I mean, and it was amazing. You look on Twitter, everyone, so I'm not special, everyone's saying, oh, this game's going to end up 23-20.
Just watch.
It's going to be 23-20. Why? It's like you've seen the movie and you know the ending, but you're going to watch anyway.
Right. It's like a car accident. You have to turn and look. I mean, even though it's an absolute disaster, you have to look.
And how many vicious hits, terrible injuries?
I mean, there are people.
It's a big boy game.
Ryan, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, the reports are that it looks better. I mean, who knows? I mean, Mike Tomlin went immediately via police escort to the hospital after the game to see Shazier, who was taken off the field. I mean, that's as scary as you can get watching a football injury. And then Vontaze Burfict taken off the field on a stretcher, basically after he was
Juju Smith-Schuster just lit him up,
stood over him,
lit him up, and then stood over him. Which here's all the dynamics there. Burfict is one of the dirtiest players in the NFL, and done all these dirty things to Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, knocked out Antonio Brown in 2015a helmet-to-helmet hit in the playoffs.
Unbelievably dirty player,
right? Mm-hmm.
But then also, if you're Schuster, when you just saw a teammate carted off like that, then how do you stand over a guy and taunt him when he might have a similar injury? You don't know at that point. I mean, he was taken off on the backboard. Gruden was, you know, going crazy, criticizing Schuster, saying it was an embarrassment and it was disgusting and everything else. I mean, it was crazy to read Twitter. Like, somebody with all that's just football, great, hard-hitting football game. Some people said, hey, I had to turn that off. That cross line, that got to the point I didn't even want to watch it anymore. And I, you know what? I get that, too.
Both of it, yeah.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was not for the faint of heart.
It's interesting to watch, too, though. I mean, that's how it used to be. I mean, every game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and we are in a different climate where we know the destruction that this game does to a human being. And so now when you see those hits, you're like, ew.
Yeah. 25 years ago, those hits would have been compiled on a VHS tape and sold.
Crunch time.
If you bought a Sports Illustrated subscription.
Yeah. Crunch course.
Right.
But 25 years later, we see those same people sitting like in rocking chairs and can't remember their family's names and all that stuff.
But, I mean, that was one of the most
physical, hard-hitting.
That's a great way to put it, a physical game.
It was a physical, hard-hitting game. I mean, I don't know what this says about me. I enjoy it. And that's
the intent. You enjoy the. I think you enjoy the intensity.
Yes, I enjoy the physicality of that game.
Well, because just like my buddy Sam texting me, goes, "Man, this is going to be a hard hitting game." Because when the Bengals and the Steelers, but usually
division rival,
awful things happen when those two plays, like cheap shots and everything else. It's.
Yeah, I mean they crossed the line. I mean we saw an unbelievable cheap shot directed at Alex Smith by the Pittsburgh Steelers earlier this year. We like you said. I mean. I think your initial reaction when you saw Burfict get lit up, he's a bad guy.
Right.
And so you're like, oh, yeah, you like seeing a bad guy get crushed. And then all of a sudden you think, man, he might have a severe brain injury there. I mean, some of the stuff I've seen on Twitter, you know, Mike Freeman, NFL writer, tweeted out, last night was a bad night for the NFL, one of the worst nights for the NFL that I've ever seen. Sam McDowell's a writer for the Stars, just another guy that jumps out of my mind because he saw it. He tweeted, that game was a nightmare for the NFL. Big Ben's flippancy about it by saying it's just AFC North football is just gross. SportsCenter dropped the ball tonight. The story is Shazier. The story is the disgusting game we just watched. It's not the comeback. So, that's just a couple of guys I saw. There's an article at ESPN.com, like one of the first stories on that hits, Vile hits Mars Steelers win. Of course, Antonio Brown was saying it was karma after the game. I don't know. Like you said, I think there's a lot of people who go, hey, man, that's what we love about football. And then there's still, but there is a different climate now where some people go, man, that's what we hate about football. And, you know, there's a lot of people wondering why the numbers are declining. There's a lot of different theories about why some of the ratings are going down just a little bit in the NFL. You wonder, is that one of the reasons? I don't know the answer. But it was tough, man. Watching the Shazier thing was scary. And that one wasn't a dirty hit. That was a bad hit in terms of fundamentals. He put his head down.
Right.
It was just a normal hit. But you like it was terrifying watching
there was,
that.
There was a bad hit on Antonio Brown too.
Yep. Yeah.
And again, so that's that. But from a football standpoint, like I don't even know like how you can watch the Bengals anymore if you're a Cincinnati fan. I mean, how furious would you be? Because they were playing for their playoff lives last night.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the number of different things that they had to do and then the number of different things that they had to allow Pittsburgh to do for Pittsburgh to come back and win that game in the final 10 minutes of that game, they did them all. Penalties, drop passes, I mean, all over the board.
Yep.
What a stupid football team. How many penalty yards?
173, I believe, was the final count. 173.
Over and over and oh, and critical times and over and over. I mean, you can criticize the Chiefs and Kansas City for the lack of playoff success, or can you imagine a coach being here for 15 years and never winning a playoff game?
Not really. I mean, no. No. But
and
it's
never
hard to imagine coaches
game.
Lasting 15 years at any team in the NFL anymore, outside of places like you know Baltimore or Pittsburgh and you know New England where they win Super Bowls.
And then having a team that just an unbelievably unlikable team,
yeah.
that's plays bad football.
13 penalties for 173 yards.
Jeez,
that's bad football.
And of course, and let me tell you this: I root for Pittsburgh now the way I rooted that root against the Raiders. I root against Pittsburgh the way I root against the Raiders and the Broncos. I can't stand the Steelers. I just can't.
Yeah,
Roethlisberger, all of them.
Yeah,
watching stand
yeah.
them.
Yeah,
yep. That irritates me too. So
yep.
Back into this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Could be a fun night in college basketball if you need a break from football. Tonight, as far as the local schools, we have Kansas State hosting South Carolina Upstate. So, trying to get some revenge in some way against Frank Martin. Not playing South Carolina, but maybe if they beat South Carolina Upstate, that'll...
There you go.
Frank Martin will feel the ripples of that.
You think so?
Maybe. But listen to that. And then the Missouri Tigers will be hosting Miami, Ohio tonight at Mizzou Arena at 8 o'clock on SEC Network. We will talk with Konzo Martin at 7:30 on the show. And Jake looking very forward to this game because he wants revenge against Miami, Ohio after Miami, Ohio in their last game beat Western Illinois in double overtime, 76-73.
Oh, boy.
And that does not sit well with you, does it?
No.
Losing to the Redhawks like that.
I will say that I had a scholarship offer from Miami of Ohio.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you consider them?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. I don't know how. I had an SAT score high enough to get me into school there. Good decision because my sophomore year, they eliminated the soccer program.
Wow.
That would have been bad.
They'd have had a fight for you.
So, kicking for the football team.
And they beat Western Illinois in double overtime.
Jerks.
And so hopefully for you, Missouri gets the win tonight.
Avenge.
There you go.
Avenge it.
I like the way you're talking now.
M-I-Z, right?
Yeah, well, of course. Z-O-U, Jake. Here's some other games of note. Tell me, thumbs up or thumbs down, could this possibly get Nate Bucati's eyes on the TV? Tell me if you like these games. Number 15, Virginia, at number 18, West Virginia.
Love it. Love it.
Oh, you love it. That's 6 o'clock in ESPNU.
Ever heard of that one, Stan?
15, Virginia, at 18, West Virginia. Also at 6 o'clock, Texas at VCU. Oh.
Shaka Smart playing against his old team.
Oh.
Huh?
Oh.
Texas.
Oh. I guess we'll see if Shaka's smart team has learned how to win a game.
Jeez. Why was I making all those noises just now? That sounded weird. Oh. Oh, Shaka smart. Okay, that's weird. Here's a good one, underrated one. Number 22, Nevada at Texas Tech.
Yeah, chance for Texas Tech to show a little something.
Never been to United Supermarkets or
Texas Network? Tech.
Many times.
You love it, don't you?
Not really.
But
it's okay.
How about SMU at TCU?
You know, it's really unfortunate TCU doesn't play a very good schedule this year. This is one of their few good games, so.
Well, they better win it.
They need to win. Yeah.
And then
they
one,
also do play Nevada, though, by the way.
Nevada's right.
TCU. So
one other good one to keep your eyes on, 8 o'clock on ESPN2, Texas A&M, 7-0, ranked number 7 against Arizona in Phoenix at Talking Stick Resort Arena.
What?
Jake is excited about that.
Talking Stick. Yeah, it's a fun place.
Oh, is that what you were talking about the other day when you kept saying, hey, I got a Talking Stick?
Yeah. No.
I'm gonna break
now. Leave me alone.
I don't know what's happened to Arizona.
Played some tough teams.
North Carolina State, SMU, Purdue. They lost 3 in a row.
They dropped out of the top 25 where they were ranked in the top 5 at the beginning of the year.
Were they number 2?
Yeah.
I've given you a lot of games to watch now. See?
That's yeah,
a
like
good.
That.
You want to get football? That's a good night of college basketball.
A slate of games.
Please.
Yeah. Hey, maybe we should have Mike DeCourcy on tomorrow.
Why won't we?
Well, I guess we will.
Oh, will we?
Maybe he can tell us when Billy Preston's going to play.
Nope. He can't. We can ask him, though.
That, do you think he'll tell you?
Nope.
Oh, come on, guys. Come on, Nate.
How the hell do I know, Nate? Also, one final game I'll mention before we break.
Before we break.
And this one could be the best one.
Come on. Oh, no, wait a second, Nate. Come on.
Also, at 6 o'clock on ESPN, how about this? In Madison Square Garden, number 4, Villanova, and number 12, Gonzaga.
Ha! Yeah.
Nova, yeah. Smoke them.
Really? Giving any points?
Just about check the line on
Villanova's,
that.
Villanova's favored by 4.5.
I'd give all 4 of them.
Nah, you got to give more than that. If you're going to say someone's going to smoke somebody, I feel like that's like 7 or 8.
At least.
Yep.
Back after 7. This on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol and Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jake Gutierrez wanted me to get to this story before the TV portion of the show is over, and I'll do it, Jake. Drew Locke named the first team All-SEC quarterback yesterday by the Associated Press. .3695 yards, 43 touchdown passes, 12 interceptions. He set the single season school and conference records for touchdown passes.
It's a record year.
Yards per completion at 16.5, if you're into that. 9.5 yards per attempt. So, right? Right. He
Lock
becomes the 5th Missouri quarterback to earn first team all conference honors. So he's the 5th. Let's see if you two can name 3 of the other 4.
Brad Smith, Chase Daniel,
Corby.
Blaine Gabbert. Is that 4?
You guys each named 1.
Huh.
I've only made 1 guess.
Corby Jones is correct. Chase Daniel's correct. He's the first quarterback to be first team all conference since Chase Daniel. Gary Lane.
Oh, Gary.
In the Big 8 back in 65. Phil Bradley, who went on to a fine MLB career.
The way you looked at me when I said Corby made me feel like I said something really stupid.
It surprised me that you got it right. Like, hey. Corby Jones and Chase Daniel, and now Drew Locke.
Corby was during my college days. I remember watching him, you know.
Surprised you remember anything.
Stories
I don't
remember
about
much.
You, right.
Pretty hazy.
Back after this on WHB. We've got Konzo Martin on the show at 7:30. Konzo Lezak on the show at 7:55. Rustin Dodd, Jeff Chedia will be in studio. And yes, in the 9 o'clock hour, we will talk about football. And we'll just talk Chiefs, you know.
Talk Chiefs, man.
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. Because here's a little secret I want to tell you. Shh, listen to this. You guys listening?
Yep.
Get close, Jake. Chiefs are still going to beat the Raiders.